VLT platform. So the four UTs, 8-meter telescopes, we can recombine three of them or four of them. We can do the same with the small ones. They are 1.8 meter each. We can move them along these stations in three possible configurations. And once we compensate for the optical path length difference, we have access to three different instruments, Amber, Pioneer, and Gravity, different possibility of recombination for different spectral modes and resolution. So we have HK with Amber, Pioneer is only H with a low resolution, and the new instrument Gravity is K-band with three different spectral settings. We have also different fringe tracking possibilities depending on your science case. I wanted to mention that Gravity doesn't just only do interferometry in a classical way of imaging. In the near future, the astrometry mode will be available. So it will be a dedicated way to measure distances with a microarcsecond possibility, or 10 of microarcsecond accuracy. And I put Matisse in gray because it's not yet installed at VLTI. And there is this project to use Gravity as a fringe tracker for Matisse to improve the performances. So compared to the other VLT instruments, the VLTI instruments stand here. So we have globally speaking, a resolution, spatial resolution of a few milliarcseconds, which is globally 10 times better than the other VLT instruments. That's it. So let's start straight away with some highlights about massive stars. The work done by Uksana et al. Published in 2014 had the goal of testing the formation of massive stars via studying the multiplicity. So they had a sample of 174 O stars. So you can see the main graph, for me at least, it's the main graph of the magnitude difference between the primary and the companion versus the angular separation. They used Pioneer, but not only Pioneer. For larger separation, they used the interferometric mode of NACO and the classical mode of NACO for longer distances. And what they found is, well, first thing, 200 new companions. They got a fraction of objects with at least one companion in the first 200 mass, which is 53%. And if you had if you add everything that was known before, plus the new detection, everything below 8 arcseconds, they find this very high multiplicity fraction of 91%. So that strongly supports the formation of massive stars in multiple systems. But they also found something about non-thermal emissions with Pioneer. They were able to resolve these non-thermal emitters, and they found that they were actually pairs, the binaries of massive stars of similar masses. So this provides them with an explanation for non-thermal emission being actually a win-win collision from these binary systems. I'm going straight to the high-mass X-ray binaries with one example, actually the only one example I found about these systems, published by Elodie Choquet in 2014, about the high-mass X-ray binary Vela X1, composed of one pulsar and one B supergiant. The question being, how is the wind shaped and how is it accreted on a compact object? They used Amber and Pioneer with the UTs. And what they found is, one structure, at least, whose size is 8 stellar radii in K. They first observed in K with Amber in 2010, and 2 years later, with Pioneer and H, they found a smaller size of 2 stellar radii. They found as well that the size doesn't change with lines. If you look at this plot, this is a squared visibility plot. It basically will tell you the size of the structure you are looking at as a function of wavelength. You can see that it's mostly the same in this band, and no difference is seen in the lines. And on top of that, they looked at the closure phase. They didn't find any significant signal, so they concluded the shape was symmetric. So this was like a first attempt of this kind of object. It's really tough observations. The scenarios to explain these observables are first a strong temperature gradient in a supergiant wind. So that would basically say that the size in K is bigger than the size in H. The thing remaining static from 2010 to 2012. The second possibility, if you assume that the size that there is no strong temperature gradient, is that the structure partially dissolved between these two observations. And the third possibility they mention is that the size they were looking at is not actually the size of the wind, but the size of the photosphere. So that's the scenario they mention. I think it would be really worthwhile to try this observation again with a new generation of instruments we have at VLTI. So this is only the beginning. I think there is a lot to be done on these objects with VLTI. I will now go straight to IGB winds and showing you some imaging results. So for IGB, the winds, we with VLTI, we are interested in looking at the onset of it, just right above the photosphere in the first stellar radii. This is an example of a work done by Claudia Palladini on the carbon-rich star R4 with Pioneer. You can see a very asymmetric structure with a lot of non-spherical dynamics going on, probably some dust obscuration happening as well, down to a few milliarcseconds level. So that's we are really looking at the interaction between the surface and the inner wind in the inner environment of the star here. I led a work similar on an O-rich Mayo star called X Hydra with Amber at two epochs. So this first epoch is actually the maximum of the pulsation cycle. We imaged the star and its inner environment in a continuum. This is the image you see, and also in a molecular band of CO and water. This is plotted in contours here. And we looked at the evolution from this phase to a later phase to look at the difference. And you can see the morphology changes a lot, both in the continuum and in molecular layers. So we would like to map a bit more temporally. This is a pulsation cycle. It's not always easy given the operational constraint at VLTI, but we hope to have more data of this kind in the future. Still in the morphology of AGB winds, I wanted to mention the Mayer et al. 2014 paper. They use the MIDI and AMBER data. I wanted to point out that they use AMBER archive data. This is a good thing to say. I think you don't always need to make a proposal. First look at the data to check if the thing you need are not already done. So they did that on PIGRUIS, which is a binary system. And to interpret the observables they have, the squared visibility and closure phases that are actually present here, they had visibilities along these directions. They needed to invoke a Roche-Loeb modeling, where you see actually the shape of the environment of the star is deformed here due to the presence of a companion. It cannot be the companion that was already known before because this companion is too far away and not massive enough. So they had to invoke a closer companion, which has to be confirmed. And if it is the case, it would be a triple hierarchical system. So I thought it was really fine work done with VLTI about this subject. Other works about morphologies of AGB winds, but this time more multi targets. We had the talk by Joya on Monday presenting some C-rich AGBs with MIDI. There is a similar work done by Markus Witkowski based on AMBER observations. He observed six O-rich Mayo stars in K-band, and he compared with two models, the Codex model, which is 1D, involving self-pulsations, and the Co5-Bold model, which does a full 3D treatment of hydro radiative transfer. And you have an image of this code here. And what you can see with the comparison on this plot, where you have the relative intensity as a function of the radius, the blue curve represents the Codex model. The red curve is an average in all the radius on this image. You can see that they are mostly consistent, and they are consistent with the AMBER observations. So globally, the picture of this star would be a spherical symmetry above the 10% flux, consistent also with the theoretical work of Freitag and Hofner 2008. But below this level of 10% of flux, you have inhomogeneities of a few mass. What is the nature of these inhomogeneities? Well, the guess is convection. There was a nice work published by Pierre Cruzaleb in 2015 based on 15 AGBs with AMBER as well that shows that this asymmetry increases with the atmospheric pressure scale height. So pointing at this convection again. A few words on dust constrained by VLTI. In Sakuto et al. 2013, based on MIDI, they studied the dust in RTVIR. So they found that actually to reproduce the observable, they needed to invoke two shells of silicate, one being composed of fosterite and aluminium, another one and a second shell of fosterite located in this area, 2 to 3 stellar radii. This is consistent with the previous work of Barnaby Norris. Norris et al. Was not VLTI strictly speaking, but it was still interferometry at VLT. The aperture masking in interferometric mode of NACO. They observed a 3 M-type star, and they found that the observables are reproduced by dust shells of iron-free silicates and corundum present at only 2 stellar radii. So the way it's done is that you compare visibilities in 2 polarization. You see a deviation along the baseline and for different wavelength. And if you see a value that is different from 1, that means you have detected a polarized structure. And this curve is actually determined by 3 parameters, the size of the star, the size of the shell, and the flux ratio between the 2. And if you look at this flux ratio versus wavelength, you can model it by a mis-scattering and get a size of the grain, quite accurate, actually. And it's 0.3 micron in this case for this observation. These are graphs for W Hydra. W Hydra was extensively observed and published on recently by Zhao Geisler. They even did an imaging attempt with MIDI. Didn't find it very conclusive because the UV plane is not so full. But the MIDI variation along the wavelength are reproduced by a corundum. So that's a confirmation of this observation as well. Even more confirmed with Onaka et al. 2016 with Amber plus Sphere, where they found that this shell of corundum coexists with silicate dust and molecular gas in the same area, only 2 to 3 stellar radii. I will finish by mentioning planetary nebula. So we had the talk by Stacy using VLTI data last Monday. I wanted to mention this paper, Liku et al. 2010, using MIDI plus the UTs on the planetary nebula M29 that Eva showed on Wednesday. So this is the HST image. This is the HST contours on which the NECO contours are overplotted. And what they did with MIDI is that they imaged the central object. They wanted to see what was powering these lobes. And they found the disk that is perpendicular to the lobes. And they deduced the size. They even deduced the size of the inner rim. And based on the wavelength variation of the visibility, they found that it was composed on amorphous silicates. And using other observables, not just VLTI, they had constraints on the companion orbit, the mass of this companion, and even its nature. So that's a really complete paper I wanted to mention. I'm done with this very short review of highlights. I wanted to mention now the VLTI second generation instrument, starting with Matisse. So Matisse is the kind of the evolution of MIDI for those of you who knew MIDI. MIDI is decommissioned. It's been a year more or less. It's not in use anymore. And so Matisse will combine 4 telescopes in L, M, and N bands. I think you can do the 3 bands at the same time, which is a very good thing. The main objective are claimed to be AGN and protoplanetary disk, but it's very absolutely suitable to observe winds and disks. You can study dynamics and chemistry by using spectroimaging. The first light is foreseen at the end of next year. So I just mentioned the feature you can be interested in for at least evolved stars. There are plenty of stuff to be done, obviously. These are the corresponding wavelengths. In this paper, Lopez et al., 2014, you can see some prediction of what Matisse will be able to do. This is a model of a protoplanetary disk, and this is a simulated observation with 80s during 3 nights. You can see that the disk, all the main components are really well imaged just with 3 nights of 80s. The edges are not so clear, but actually everything is there, so that looks very promising. Let me move on to Gravity, which is the new instrument at VLTI. It arrived last year in July. It is now in the commissioning phase, and it will be offered as a regularly operated instrument starting in October. And I'm going to show you a short animation. So let's get rid of that. The 4 UTs, the light is sent to the delay lines to compensate for optical path length difference. Then it's directed to the VLTI lab, where we have all our instruments. Gravity is there. This is the Gravity feeding optics. I skip this part because it's not, well, there is a lot of stuff going on, and you won't be quizzed on that, don't worry. And I wanted to show you this part, which is the recombination of the four telescope beams. So you have your four telescope here, and we use this chip here to make the interference. And this is very, very short. It's like the size of a match. So we split the beams, and we recombine them in more than six lines, because we have a technique to have a robust estimation of phase invisibilities. So we have like 24 outputs. We spectrally dispersed, as you can see, with this rainbow effect. And you can see what we basically see when we operate gravity. We see this spectrally dispersed channel. And you have all your baselines in this direction. I put the link to the full video on the PDF later on if you want to see the PDF. So in a few words, gravity, so it's a four telescope beam combiner. The real novelty for me is that actually gravity is two interferometers in one. You have the scientific one I just showed you, but you also have a dedicated fringe tracker, which does the same thing, but with less spectral resolution and much faster. The purpose of this is to freeze the atmospheric turbulence and get very stable exposure. So you can integrate for several hundred seconds. The angular resolution is still like Pioneer, about 3 mass. We have 2 modes, the single dual field. So that means you can have a reference object on which you can freeze the fringes, and on the other one you can expose for a long time. So it's going to be really great for binary studies. 3 spectral settings offer, as I said, in October 1st, and in the future, an astrometry with a 50 micro arc second accuracy. Before finishing, I wanted to show you some results of the science verification phase. So the science verification is just to show the limits, the performances of the instrument before it's offered to the community. The policies are that all the data are public. So if you're interested, just look at this page. There's a hyperlink on the PDF, so you can click on it if you're interested. 2 examples, very briefly. We observed an ETA-CAR-like system. It's not ETA-CAR, it's a similar system. The goal was to find out the bracket gamma emission distribution and how it could be linked to binarity. So here you see a plot of the differential phase as a function wavelength in the bracket gamma. This is just an indicator of asymmetry. So we indeed detected an asymmetry in this line, but not only in this line, in other lines like sodium. In helium line as well, we saw some visibility variation, so that shows that there is a difference in sizes. So there are plenty of things to be done on this object. It's very, very promising. Second object, a yellow hypergiant on its way to be a Wolf-Rayet star. Same question again, what's the wind structure like? The asymmetric structure was seen in a bracket gamma line again. So these 4 plots here, they show the asymmetry of the object via the quantity that is called the closure phase. Basically, if it's different from zero, it means your object is asymmetric. So you can see that on these configurations, there is nothing to be clearly seen, but on this, there is a clear signal. So if you have actually more data, you could possibly image the wind structure in bracket gamma at a spatial resolution of a few milliarcseconds. That's very interesting. Also interesting is the fact that we detected the sodium doublet, which is often associated with a strong mass loss event. And we detected it with the 80s. Before, this detection only happened with the UTs, but with gravity, with the 80s, we got this detection as well. That's very important because it's much easier to get 80 nights than UT nights. So now this window is open as well. This is my conclusion. So I hope I showed you examples that demonstrate the VLTI is a robust and good tool to study winds at the mass scale and also related phenomena. I think particularly the multiplicity survey with Pioneer could be inspiring for people looking in planetary nebula for binaries. The second generation is well on its way. Gravity and Matisse will soon provide spectral imaging. VLTI is powerful on its own, but it's also a very good idea to have other instruments, Sphere in particular, and ALMA. I'm thinking in particular about the study of CO lines with ALMA and with gravity. It could be a good, a powerful combination. The gravity astrometry is coming soon. If you are interested in this instrument, the deadline is coming very soon. So, before thanking you for your attention, if you are interested in interferometric data, I would just like to advertise this tool. It's not developed by ISO, it's developed by GMMC in France. It's just a database of readily reduced data, so they are science-ready data. Some of them are even published, and they are really retrievable and downloadable. It would be take 30 seconds to find your favorite object on this database. You can see the sky coverage. So we have the Science3D refits in red. The Science3D published data are in green. It's not so clear on this image, but we have a few hundreds of them. And we also have observation logs of data that exist but that are not published. And for this data, we give the contacts to the team who observed these stars. So you have everything to get in touch with the relevant people. Online, you can even look at this data on this portal. You can even look at them and model them if you want. There are just a bit some terms of use. We just ask that if you are going to publish with this data, that you contact the team who obtained this data just to get a bit more scientific return on the investment that was made for this observation. Thank you very much.
Can you go back to the image when you show the planetary nebula, M29, please? How do you model the disk, or how do you say it's a disk?
I didn't model anything. I just read the paper. No, but yeah, they modeled the visibilities and the differential visibilities of so that gives you the size of the object you are looking at, and with a very simple parametric function, you can see if it's a disk.
So is it direct imaging? Direct imaging?
You can't really talk about imaging. It's more like you measure size along a certain direction in the sky. MIDI only has two telescopes. You cannot really talk about proper imaging. But you can know the spatial extent of the object given a certain orientation in the sky. This is how they find. This is how they found that this disk is actually a different size. There is a long a major axis and a minor axis. And they could also found that there is an inner rim. It's not a plain disk, but you have a cavity in the middle. So this you can tell with visibilities.
Okay, other question or comment? Yeah.
So when will MATIS be available for science? So the first light is expected late 2017. It's a bit late, 18, so beginning of 2018. And so after first light, you at least have 6 months, I would say, of commissioning at the minimum. So the earliest would be 2018, late 2018.
Hi, the astrometric mode of gravity, I'm assuming that's differential, right, over a certain, say, pairs of stars or binary stars. Can you just say a little bit more about it?
Sure, absolutely. So, it's this way. So actually in gravity you have two ways, the fringe tracker and the science being combiner. Your astrometric measurement will have the reference of your fringe tracker object. And the separation range with the UTs is the maximum is more or less 2 arcseconds, and with the 80s it's a bit larger. It goes to 4 or 5 arcseconds. Yeah. So compared to Gaia, I think it's Gaia is like 10 microseconds or maybe less, 5 microseconds, something like that. Depending on the observations, of course.
Yeah, but it's a different thing. I mean, Gaia is measuring absolute position,
yes.
But you can measure wobbles of things.
That's it.
If there's a binary with a planet or something, maybe you can see a wobble.
Sure.
Yeah.
Is this just because of a sensitivity?
What is MATIS?
MATIS, one of the main goals was to observe protoplanetary disks. Is that just because these are very bright? Or?
And it's another wavelength range.
Sorry,
you're asking me why are the scientific goals different for MATIS?
yeah, there are a lot of other structures in the infrared or in the M and L bands.
You mean why more these objects than EVO stars or stuff like that?
For example, or Bioshocks?
Bioshocks? Bioshocks with interferometry? I'm not sure, but...
Me neither, that's why I'm very ignorant in this sense, I'm sorry.
No, it's all right, but I guess they build up on the science that was made by MIDI originally, so that was the natural extension.
With Matisse, you will see essentially dust, in fact, so... They open new bands, you know, up to the Hell band, and the new thing is that compared to MIDI, you don't have just two telescopes, you have four telescopes, so you have the phase, and so you can reconstruct images directly, so that's a strong point. And this is the wavelengths and the lines that you are supposed to observe.
But you can do, I think you can do plenty of stuff. It's like gravity, actually. Gravity was motivated by the case of the galactic center, but you can do much more than that, obviously.
Other comments? Yeah, William?
Yes, that's right. You get the whole K-band with... That's it. And if you are on axis, you always get the fringe tracker observations, which is in low resolution.
Okay, so I think we have to stop, and thank the speaker again. Yeah.